I've found this ultimate mock draft to be a little bit eye-opening. I thought going into this that there would be a lot of options, and there still may be for the Cardinals, but the way that our mock draft has developed over the past 4 days eliminated a lot of those options that I thought might be there for the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought they might have a choice of J.C. Horn or Caleb Farley.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think Patrick Surtain would be on the board if they definitely do want to go cornerback. Now, there is growing speculation that they could move up still. I know Gambo's kind of shot those possibilities down to get a wide receiver. I just found this process to be a little bit discouraging in terms of what could happen in the 15 picks before the Cardinals go, Bick.
Yeah, listen, I look at this and I'm very curious to see what exactly is available to them, and do they look offense? Do they look defense? Do they try to give more to Cliff Kingsbury? I think what you're going to hear is a lot of optimism about reworking this team throughout the free agency period. And I think they have, and it's just a matter now whether or not it's going to work, whether they have guys who still have really good production left or not.
Yeah, press conference starting. Here you go.
Things for Steve. Steve, given the nature of incomplete medicals regarding many prospects and the absence of real scouting combine, how much more of a roll of the dice is this year's draft compared to others, and what type of challenges does that represent for you guys and other teams?
Well, it poses a number of challenges, Bob, but the fact that we're all on the same playing field makes it a little bit easier. But there's no question that the obstacles have put us in a position where there's a lot of forecasting. So not only are you looking at the medical history, you're looking at the games missed when you're trying to grade their durability. And availability is everything in the National Football League. So it's a real important part of this process. And Tom Reed and our training staff has done an outstanding job, as well as our scouts, taking all the information in and doing the best we can, again, to forecast what type of career he's going to have, whether it's a one contract or potentially a multi-contract career.
Steve, there's been a lot of talk out there about the number of players that are available, that maybe there's fewer this year just because of guys being able to go back to school and all that stuff. Have you found in general that this is just in terms of the sheer pool, a shallower draft, and will that make later rounds more difficult?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the number of players certainly affects this draft. I mean, I think we went into this process with 5,500 reports in total, and 1,800 of those were guys who decided to go back to college. So, again, there's a number of things that continue to create some legwork for us, but I do think the amount of talent at a number of positions is very strong in this draft, and the way our board is stacking up, really excited about next Thursday.
Cliff, when you look at Kyler over the last couple of years, you've seen progress. What are you expecting in year three for him based on what you guys have done in the offseason?
I'm hoping we continue that same progress. I think to come in, win Rookie of the Year, and then make a Pro Bowl year two, and you know, go from 5 wins to 8 wins, you're on the right track. And we still know there's tons of improvement, not only for him, but as an offense and for us as an offensive staff. So we're all really excited about the opportunity, and I know he's feeling good, been training really hard, and excited to get back out there.
Next up, please, Mark, Kevin, and Josh.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the time today. Question is for Steve. With the 17-game season being announced, how does that affect how you draft and also how you build a team depth-wise?
Well, again, I think that goes back to some of the injuries that incur throughout the season. The fact that your roster does take quite a bit of a beating, and it did on a 16-game scale. So the fact that we have 17, you want to make sure you have a depth at every position, especially the positions up front, offensive and defensive line. I think generally when you look at history, tells you that there's attrition at those positions, and you have to do your best to make sure that those second team guys are available and can step in and start in a pinch.
Hey, Steve, just curious if you could give a rundown of what you think about the receiver class, especially day one, and do you guys feel like even though you have 3 certified good receivers that you can still upgrade there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really deep receiver class, and they all have different traits, especially those guys at the top. They're all different sizes. They have different skill sets, whether they can play X or Z or do some things for you in the return game. A couple of those guys have that skill set. To me, I think there's probably going to be five or six guys that could potentially go in the first round. We've already seen that there could be as many as three go in the top 15 picks. So they're exciting to watch. And again, there's a lot of guys that they remind me of. Chase at LSU reminds me a little bit of Andre Johnson when he came out in Miami, probably showing my age here. But he was a guy that, you know, had all the traits, you know, size, speed, explosiveness, run after the catch. And then you look at Smith and Waddle, and people question Smith's size, you know, weighing in at 170 pounds. And again, dating myself, I played in a high school all-star game with a guy who weighed about 174 pounds coming out of Syracuse that you might have heard of, named Marvin Harrison. It was a pretty good player. Those guys have similar body types. And then Waddle reminds me a little bit of Steve Smith when he came out of Utah. Squatty, explosive, has the ability to return, can be dynamic in that part of the game as well on fourth down. So, again, those guys at the top, but there's a number of other players. I mean, Bateman, the receiver at Minnesota, the receiver of Florida. I mean, you go down the list. You know, Bateman has tremendous skills running routes, great body control. So, again, the depth at that position is very, very good.
Hey, Steve, I have a historical question for you. 2004 draft, when you're scouting Larry, how many times did you personally see him in person, I guess? And then what were those conversations like leading up to you guys setting the board with him on at top of it?
So when I went to Pitt that year, I think I probably saw him three times. The last time, I'll never forget, I took him and a corner there named Shante Spencer to lunch. And we went to a little place on the south side that's called Fatheads. Great sandwiches, and you know I'll never turn down a good sandwich. But it was a lot of fun. And I got to know Larry, and that's where our relationship sort of started. As we talked about him through the draft process, I'll never forget guys like Eli Manning were coming out, Robert Gallery, which was selected right in front of him. Ben Roethlisberger was in that draft. So there was a ton of talent. But there's no doubt in our minds that Larry was going to be a tremendous pro and certainly the type of receiver that he turned out to be. And, you know, not only was he a great one, he was as good as they get in the community and in our locker room as well.
You're listening to the Arizona Cardinals pre-draft press conference here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
This is a little off topic and for either of y'all, but with this being the last week that State Farm Stadium's being used for a vaccine site, I was curious if either of you guys got to get out there and just kind of what it's like seeing a place you know so well be used for something so different than your typical Sunday.
Cliff, you want me to take that?
You got that one.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, I was out there, actually. And it starts with our leadership, and that starts with Michael Bidwell. And obviously, the fact that they're using State Farm Stadium for the purpose of good in the community, again, just goes back to show you a lot about our organization and how much we care about our community.
Steve, I was wondering how the absence of the third and the fourth rounders affect your thought process when it comes to possible trade scenarios.
Well, we have Rodney Hudson and DeAndre Hopkins, so I don't know if any of you guys have graded those picks, but I feel very, very good about those spots. Again, joking, would love to have the opportunity to select in both of those rounds. Particularly whenever you look at the board and you see the type of players that could potentially be there. But again, when you have a guy who is, you know, as good as they come in the league at the center position and obviously one of the best receivers in the National Football League, you feel pretty good about where you're sitting. So it's disappointing that we don't have those picks, but at the same time, I'm going to look at the positive.
Hey, for both of you guys, I hate to address the elephant in the room, but what's Larry doing? Is he coming back for an 18th season? Is he done? Has he told you guys what's happening?
Nothing has changed on that front. My communication with Larry has literally consisted of golf investments or Phoenix Suns basketball. So like we mentioned before, you know, Larry is going to decide this on his time, and he's one of the greatest players of all time, and so obviously he deserves to have that time.
All right, we'll move next to Richard, Bob, and Jordan.
Yeah, this question is for Coach. Coach, how much of an advantage is your recent experience in college football when it comes to drafting? Because I would imagine you probably recruited or tried to recruit half of the guys that are in this class.
It definitely helps at times, particularly in the Big 12 and in that region, having some familiarity with the recruiting process of those guys, whether they came to Texas Tech or not. You get some insight, you get some background, and then knowing the coaches in that league as well as I do, you feel like you can get some really pertinent information from those guys.
Steve, going back to my first question and the medicals and the kind of roll of the dice this year, talking to draft analysts, at least they've said that it could make later round picks a lot less worthy than prior years. And with that in mind, would you consider trading up to get a player you really covet, be it a receiver, tight end, or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at our history, and it'll tell you that depending on the way the board falls, I mean, we'll be aggressive one way or the other, whether it's to move up, move back. Depending on what plays, how it plays itself out. So there are a number of factors that do go into it that you just mentioned, not only the medical, but the quality of the players that are left in those, you know, back part of those rounds. With some of those guys going back to college, you have to wonder when you start hitting the sixth and seventh round, the type of quality that will be there. So there's a number of factors that play into it, and we'll certainly take a run at being aggressive if we need to come up.
This one's for Steve. Steve, when you look at this draft class, what position groups do you find are more deep than other position groups?
Well, as I said earlier, I've been impressed with a number of the receivers. The outside linebacker class, guys who are generally college defensive ends that project as outside linebackers, which would be our Sam and our Wills, that group has been impressive to me, guys that are going to be able to come in and start at an early point in their career. A lot of the inside linebackers, guys who can play Mike or Mo in our scheme. There are a number of guys who are athletic enough to play Mo and play dime linebacker, or there are guys that can be the Mike for you and play all three downs with the cover ability you look for. So those are the positions that really stand out to me. I like some of the guys who are inside players, the guards and the centers. So again, there's enough depth in this draft that gets you excited, even with some of the players going back to college.
Moving along, Darren, Mike, and Cam.
This is for Cliff. Cliff, now that you guys have JJ and with the guys you drafted last year and stuff, kind of how do you see your defensive line right now? Do you feel like it needs to be get any additions, or are you happy with where it stands?
You know, we're always trying to add depth, but with the addition of JJ, the young guys we drafted last year, signing Jordan Phillips, we really like where it's at, particularly compared to the previous couple of seasons going into this draft. So really excited. I think with Coach Buck and what he brings to the table with those young guys mixed in with some vets who've had a ton of success in this league, it's going to be a great room.
Steve, when you look at the opt-outs, close to 99 guys, and some guys haven't played football since 2019, how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you go back, Mike, and ideally you would love to watch the 2020 tape, but because of the pandemic and the obstacles that were created, we just have to dig deeper and go back and cover the 2019 tape, or even prior to that if a guy had an injury. So we'll do the best we can, and our scouts have done a fantastic job on the road. Those guys don't get enough credit for the amount of information they compile, along with the amount of tape that those guys watch on a regular basis. Our coaches actually even went out a lot this spring. I think they went to close to 50 pro days, which is quite a bit more than normal because we didn't have a combine. So our coverage this spring has been extremely wide. We've casted a wide net, and I feel very, very good about going into this process and the type of information we've accumulated.
Hey, Stephen, Cliff, hope everything is going well. Guys, what's the plan for draft day? What do y'all, is it going to be like last year, or y'all have a different plan for this year? And then, Steve, when you turn on the tape of Kyle Pitts, what do you see?
So we will be in the draft room. The NFL has allowed us to be back in our war room. So there'll be a number of us in there, socially distanced. And then as far as Kyle Pitts, tremendous player from outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is unique because he went all the way down to the University of Florida. Spent some time virtually with him, have been extremely impressed. Everything you hear about his character, his commitment to the game, and his passion is extremely high. Then you turn on the tape and you see a guy who can do it all. I mean, he's got rare and unusual height, weight, and speed. He's a real mismatch problem for a number of different positions defensively. And I haven't seen many guys that really possess the skill set that he has.
Arizona Cardinals holding their pre-draft press conference. You're listening to live coverage here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Caleb Farley, I guess two-parter. What's your evaluation of him, and how concerning are these recent surgeries?
Like Caleb a lot. You know, another guy that came in early in his career as a wide receiver. They moved him to corner. Did not have tape from this past year because he opted out. And as far as the medical goes, you know, it's just it's going to be up to our doctors and trainers. You have to lean on those guys and rely on them. And I'll meet with those guys early next week, and we'll address all of those concerns. But as a player, hasn't even scratched the surface yet, but has got tremendous upside and potential for a guy who is as long as he is. He's got tremendous stop and start ability, and really is probably as sudden in transition as any corner in this draft. So he's got a bright future.
Cliff, I was wondering if you saw the Rams Malibu draft house and whether you felt like, A, that was a response to you from last year, and whether you're disappointed that you're actually going to be in the war room this year and won't get a chance to spruce it up a bit.
Yeah, I really think it's just a ploy by McVay to allow himself the opportunity to take his shirt off again and jump in the pool like he did on Hard Knocks. Probably sip a little rosé, dip in the ocean, and make some draft picks. So I think more than anything, he headed that up. So it should be fun to watch.
Oh, I don't know how to top that. But, hey, Cliff, do you know when we could see you guys – on the field, and if you had any players or any groups of players opt out of OTAs?
You know, guys are working out on their own, and we're doing virtual meetings right now. So that's the part of the offseason we're in. We became accustomed to it last year, and so we feel like it's actually going smoother than last year. We made some adjustments to it, and so it's been good to see them on there every day and starting to talk football again.
Next up, please, Colin, Kyle, and Ed.
Hey, Steve, this one's for you. As it relates to Larry, sorry, one more on that front, but if you don't get an answer, is that something you need prior to the draft, and how will an answer one way or another affect, you know, how you guys view a wide receiver this year potentially?
Yeah, I don't. No matter what Larry decides, it does not affect our draft plans. Again, to me, you can't have enough good players at one position. There's guys on, you know, 1 year contracts. So again, as far as building your team and the type of depth that you have, you can never have enough good players. And obviously, Larry Fitzgerald's a great one, so you wouldn't say no to him either.
Steve, on that team building theme, how much different philosophically do you look at adding guys in free agency compared to the draft and kind of the balance between short-term needs and long-term needs?
Well, I think philosophically what we've done is we look at free agency as filling and supplying our needs, and then the draft is the best player available. Obviously, if two players are in a similar area and one is a positional need, you'd lean towards that player. But you never want to get in a position where you have your board stacked and you have an 87 or a 90 type player and you pass them up for a positional need, because ultimately your needs are always changing. I've said it many times, you know, your needs in April and May are much different than they are in October and November. So needs are always changing, but you can't have enough good players.
Steve and Cliff, you guys talked about Caleb Farley a few minutes ago. How deep do you think this cornerback class is, and how do you distinguish between the three guys generally perceived to be the top three prospects at that position?
Steve, you got it.
I mean, I do think that it's a deep corner draft. And again, what's your pick your poison? You know, these guys are all a little different, whether it's Surtain, Horn, Farley. There are guys that can be nickels, you know, nickel only. To me, the nickel position is getting harder and harder to find. I think at one time that was a secondary thought, but the way players, these teams are playing schematically in the NFL, the nickel position is as important as ever. And for us to have a guy like Byron Murphy who can play inside and outside, it gives us tremendous value. But there are guys that can play inside and outside in this draft. Some guys that can only play outside with their length and their movement skills. So really feel good about that position and the opportunities that may present themselves. But those top three are all very, very good. The first two that I just talked about with Horn and Surtain, the bloodlines that they come from are obviously very, very good, which shows up in their competitiveness, the way they play the game, the way they approach the game, and they've been very, very impressive to evaluate this spring.
We'll close it out with four more, please. Richard and Bob, Howard and Darren.
Yeah, this one is for Steve. Steve, you talked about, you know, not having that third and fourth round pick. If things, you know, fall into place in the first 15 picks where you have a chance to trade down and maybe get some picks, how enticing would that be to have that option?
It would be very enticing. In fact, if you had to weigh it out, I mean, with six picks and where we're sitting, I think you'd be more likely to trade back than to trade up. So that's one thing. And then, you know, as far as trading back and accumulating more picks, it's no different than a lottery ticket. The more you have, the better you have a chance to hit. So we know it's an inexact business, and to be able to accumulate more picks would be a real coup for us.
Cliff, this is a quarterback question, so I'm throwing it to you. How much does the anticipated early run on quarterbacks in the top of the draft help teams picking in the middle of the first round like you guys? And could a player you have rated well within your top 10 slide to you at 16 because of that?
Definitely. Yeah, we're hoping they go the top five picks because, like you said, it'll push a player that we have rated really highly to us. And so it's going to be interesting. It's a great group. I haven't studied them as thoroughly as I have in the past, but very, very talented young men that all could go in that top 10 to 15 picks.
You guys talked earlier, Steve, you mentioned about needs in free agency. Just because either of you just talk about the most recent additions, I guess, with Malcolm Butler and James Conner, and how glad you were to get them to come to the Cardinals.
I think really, really excited. And I think when you look at the way we bolstered our roster in free agency, you look at guys who are tremendous leaders at their respective organizations, how they've been extremely physical, which, again, was an area we wanted to improve as a football team. But more than anything, you know, guys that are going to fit into this organization, into the locker room, team-first mentality, those are the things I think that excited Coach and I the most, that, you know, a group of guys that are great workers and leaders, not followers.
Cliff, you guys have a lot of different pieces that you're going to be plugging in on offense this year. I'm just curious, obviously you haven't had a chance to see them on the field, but do you sense that this offense is going to look different, perform different because of all the different pieces?
I'm just hopeful that we'll take another step. You know, I thought we made big strides at times last year, and I think going into year three, same system for a lot of these guys. We felt like we made some key additions and some key spots. And then Kyler's mastery of the offense, I think, with the guys I've coached before, I know it was in college, but year three is kind of the year where they take total control of it. So with all those things coming together, we just really hope we can take another big step offensively and be one of the offenses that's really hard to stop this season.
Cliff, Steve, thank you. And thank you all.
There you go. There's the Cliff Kingsbury, Steve Keim pre-draft press conference from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center. A lot of ground covered there. We'll react to some of what we heard next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. We'll get to the reaction to the press conference of the Arizona Cardinals general manager Steve Kymen, head coach Cliff Kingsbury in a second. I heard you, on the update, you probably heard 8-7 now, Diamondbacks and Reds, another wacky one at Great American Ballpark. The Diamondbacks have managed to blow a three-run lead already and most of a four-run lead.
But they're still winning.
They are still winning.
Yeah. So look
it's
at the bright spot.
8-7. And they've yielded a total of 5 home runs to Reds hitters.
Yeah,
today.
Taylor Widener, I don't know how long he went, but I was encouraged by what he did, I'll tell you that much.
5 1/3, 5 hits, 4 runs, struck out 7, okay. But he gave up 3 home runs.
Okay.
He was very encouraging until that last, third.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Castellanos and Suarez got him in the 6th inning and tied it up, and he was chased. So they've gone to Bukauskas, Riley Smith, and Kevin Ginkle. Smith and Ginkle have both given up home runs in the bullpen. So that's where they are now, going to the 8th inning, 8-7, Diamondbacks and Reds. Before we get into some of the sound bites and some of the things that Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury said, any big takeaways from that press conference?
I was blown away when Steve Keim made the declaration that you can never have too many good players.
He's not lying.
No,
when
I know.
I'm saying you're not lying.
Yeah.
When those words came out of Steve Keim's mouth, your reaction in the studio was visceral.
It was.
You were.
I was aghast.
You were taken aback.
I certainly was.
Knocked off your pegs, if you will.
I was. there was a tremendous dearth of anything compelling in that press conference. But then again, these pre-draft press conferences rarely ever, advance the story, if you will. I thought Cliff Kingsbury took a quality shot at Sean McVay.
Yes, he did. He did. He had a little fun with that. Mm-hmm. Now, where the Cardinals are, and obviously it's always in play, but at number 16, with what could unfold in front of them, with the needs they have, with the players that could be available, we always have this debate every year. Does it make sense to trade up? Does it make sense to trade back? Does it make the most sense to stay put? Steve Keim was asked that question about moving up or moving back in the first round. Here's what he had to say.
It would be very enticing. In fact, if you had to weigh it out, with 6 picks and where we're sitting, I think it would be more likely to trade back than to trade up. So that's one thing. And then, as far as trading back and accumulating more picks, it's no different than a lottery ticket. The more you have, the better you have a chance to hit. So we know it's an inexact business, and to be able to accumulate more picks would be a real coup for us.
A real coup for us. That sounds like somebody who is looking to trade back.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he balanced that by saying the diminished player pool makes you really wonder what you're getting in the back end of the draft. So I don't know. I'm not quite certain what they're going to do there. I do like what Steve Keim said, because a lot of people are looking, hey, what are you going to do about those third and fourth round draft picks that you have none of?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, give us the grades in DeAndre Hopkins and Jeremy Hudson and we're good.
Rodney
Hudson, him too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great response.
Who's Jeremy Hudson?
He works here.
He works here.
Is that who it is?
Solid,
right.
Solid guy.
Can solid Houston Astros fan. Yeah, that's right.
And
that's Jeremy Foster.
No, that's Jeremy Foster.
Jeremy Hudson, he's a web guy.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jeremy Foster, Jeremy Hudson.
Jeremy Piven.
Jeremy Piven.
Class
Piven.
Today.
Rod Jeremy.
Not familiar. He does not work here.
Oh boy.
Oh, I didn't expect shenanigans in this segment of the show. That's fantastic.
Sorry.
No, it's all
sorry,
right.
Jeremy Hudson.
on the cornerback position, which still is obviously a big possibility for the Cardinals. In our ultimate mock draft, they had Caleb. I chose Caleb Farley for them at number 16. Caleb Farley specifically came up today. Steve Keim said phrases, we like Caleb Farley, hasn't even scratched the surface yet. He's got a very bright future. He did address somewhat the medical questions about Caleb Farley with the back injuries, the surgeries that he's undergone. Steve Keim also was asked about, the on the offensive side of the ball, the wide receivers in this year's class. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's a really deep receiver class, and they all have different traits, especially those guys at the top. They're all different sizes. They have different skill sets, whether they can play X or Z or do some things for you in the return game. A couple of those guys have that skill set. To me, I think there's probably going to be five or six guys that could potentially go in the first round. We've already seen that there could be as many as three go in the top 15 picks. So they're exciting to watch. And again, there's a lot of guys that they remind me of. Chase at LSU reminds me a little bit of Andre Johnson when he came out at Miami, probably showing my age here. But he was a guy that had all the traits, size, speed, explosiveness, run after the catch. And then you look at Smith and Waddle and people question Smith's size, weighing in at 170 pounds. And again, dating myself, I played in a high school all-star game with a guy who weighed about 174 pounds coming out of Syracuse that you might have heard of named Marvin Harrison. It was a pretty good player. Those guys have similar body types. And then Waddle reminds me a little bit of Steve Smith when he came out of Utah. Squatty, explosive, has the ability to return, can be dynamic in that part of the game as well on fourth down. So, again, those guys at the top, but there's a number of other players. I mean, Bateman, the receiver at Minnesota, the receiver at Florida. I mean, you go down the list. Bateman has tremendous skills running routes, great body control. So, again, the depth at that position is very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, there is depth to Steve Keim's point. He said there could be three or four taken in the first 15. Where we are in our mock draft process, four in the first 19, three in the top 12 with Chase, Waddle, and Smith. What do you think of that? There's been so many comparisons between Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. What do you think about that comparison to Steve Smith?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. It's a very physical receiver that he's talking about.
Yeah. I mean,
and you like that.
Yeah. And when you're getting compared to somebody as great as Steve Smith was, I actually think in a lot of ways that might be a better comparison. If he went that way, now, you can't go wrong being compared to Tyreek Hill if you can match that skill set. But to me, Steve Smith was a much more complete receiver than Tyreek Hill even is now.
Yes, that is very, very true. So that's a lot of good information volunteered about the receivers, though, is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's kind of funny that the dance are still doing around Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, come on, they know what he's doing by now.
Yep, here's Cliff Kingsbury was asked about the Larry Fitzgerald situation.
Nothing has changed on that front. My communication with Larry has literally consisted of golf, investments, or Phoenix Suns basketball. So, like we mentioned before, Larry is going to decide this on his time, and he's one of the greatest players of all time, and so obviously he deserves to have that time.
I was hoping the phrasing of the question would be a little bit different by the participants, because we've heard, hey, anything new on the Larry Fitzgerald situation? That's a real easy out. I would have loved to have heard somebody asked the question to Steve Keim. I guess I could have got on the Zoom myself and done it.
You're doing a radio show, man. Oh, I know. We were carrying it live. We could have done that. But, why didn't we do that?
But maybe phrase it, do you guys have interest in bringing Larry Fitzgerald back? Because I think that's very much up for debate at this point.
Or how about if Larry decides he wants to come back, is there room on the roster? Is there room in the cap?
Oh,
is
yeah. What answer do you think you would get out of that question? Of course. There's always room for Larry Angelo. Right, Carlin?
Jeremy spoke in class today.
That was mine. Oh. I said that. Maybe
something. We have time for the Steve Keim story. Yes. Jarrett noticed this as well. Steve Keim was asked about all those years ago scouting Larry Fitzgerald prior to the 2004 draft. See if you notice it as well.
Guys like Eli Manning were coming out, Robert Gallery, which was selected right in front of him. Ben Roethlisberger was in that draft. So there was a ton of talent, but there's no doubt in our minds that Larry was going to be a tremendous pro and certainly the type of receiver that he turned out to be. And, not only was he a great one, he was as good as they get in the community and in our locker room as well.
No past tense action going on.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I would think they have to know by now. Right?
I would think.
I mean, I think it's what we said it was yesterday. It's take some time, Larry. Think about it, baby. I think Larry's retired from the Cardinals and mulling whether or not he's retired from football. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. Coming up next, the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft continues. The Tennessee Titans on the clock at number 22. That and more next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
We are a week away from the NFL draft, but we are 4 days into our Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft. There has been 21 picks made already over the course of the week on the three different radio shows here on the station. And before the Tennessee Titans make their selection at number 22, let's take a look back at the most recent action in the mock draft.
Previously on the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
The pick is in. Let's go to the podium and see what they're going to do here.
With the 19th pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Detroit Lions select Kadarius Toney, wide receiver, go Gators.
With the 20th pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Chicago Bears select Greg Newsom, the second, cornerback, Northwestern.
All right. In the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Indianapolis Colts select Jalen Phillips, defensive end, the U.
The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
Ultimate Mock Draft.
Bickley and Marotta are on the clock.
Tennessee Titans. With the number 22 overall pick, a team that has needs. They got hit pretty hard with free agency departures in their receiver core. They were also pretty anemic at getting after the passer last year, despite having Jadeveon Clowney. They did sign Bud Dupree. But that is a need we're going to address at number 22. So with the 22nd pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Tennessee Titans select Kwity Paye. Defensive end from Michigan.
Kwity Paye, edge, Michigan.
You could describe Paye as an explosive, twitched-up ball of power. He's fantastic off the edge with his agility and quick hands. His legs help to drive him past the block into the backfield, and he has pursuit speed that is unseen for defenders of his size. He doesn't just have to work the edge alone. He has the speed that can make him a great interior rusher as well. The knock would be his short strides, which make him vulnerable to the run, but if he's rushing on pass plays, chances are the quarterback won't be standing up for much longer. NFL comp, Dolphins defensive end, Emmanuel Ogba.
So Kwity Paye goes to Tennessee at number 22. Mm-hmm. A prospect I really like. The more I read about him, the more I learn about him, the more highlights I watch of him. I like him even more. All of that enthusiasm was just dampened by the choice of Sugar Ray as the background music for that draft capsule.
What an odd choice, right?
That was brutal. Yeah, very,
I lose
very
my
odd.
Eyes and I'll take you there.
Yeah, brutal. Who was the guy that we just spoke of with the some concussions? Who was that guy again?
Jalen Phillips.
That was your pick, Phillips.
For Indianapolis at yeah, 21, okay. Yeah.
Jalen Phillips and the concussion story, it's part of a bigger story that I think is interesting, Vinny. I don't know if you saw this, but the Football Oversight Committee is recommending new rules changes for college football. And basically what they've done is they've studied concussions for a 5-year period. They found 72% happen outside the actual games. In other words, the manic coaching approaches and practice approaches in college football where there's very little accountability for the head coach and no players' union sticking up for the players is getting guys loaded up on concussions in practice before they even get into the pipeline of playing college games and NFL games. So they're going to recommend some pretty serious things that are going to really limit how much physicality can happen on college campuses. And I'll just say this, that if you get less players who have accumulated X amount of concussions going into their professional career, you've done a good thing. And I think the game of football can survive without the Oklahoma drill. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's one of their proposals, to abolish that and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, to reduce full padded practices, to reduce scrimmages and abolish collision exercises like the Oklahoma drill was the example given. I read that same thing this morning, and the way it was worded, and the numbers pop out, obviously, but the way it was worded raised a question for me.
Mm-hmm.
The study reviewed, and this was a study from the Football Oversight Committee, and this is from Sports Illustrated. The study reviewed 68 concussions in Division I college football from 2015 to 2019 and found that 72% of those 68 happened outside of games.
Okay.
Does that seem like it might have been manipulated for the purpose here?
I don't know.
If you really want, and I don't have a problem with the reduction of the contact, if that's the mm-hmm. the path they're going to go down, but shouldn't it be all concussions? Wouldn't that be a much more telling study?
Yeah,
see the percentage of total concussions in that time span.
I don't think they were selective in which concussions that they studied. I think it was the only concussions they could positively identify for study. Maybe I'm wrong. But I do think this, though. I think this is happening all across football. You see it in the NFL, where a lot of the things that used to be tradition and staples and the way football players prepared themselves changing dramatically. The idea of beating a guy down to build him up, to callous a body, to prepare him for football, that's no longer acceptable strategy. And now they're going to hold colleges to that accountability.
Yeah.
Now, again, and there are coaches who are far worse than this than others. Part of the reason why I love Herm Edwards is Herm's not a guy that would ever do that, in my opinion. He would never take his power and go, you know what? I'm going to build a juggernaut of a football team by abusing these kids. But some coaches have done that. And I'm sure there are some coaches who still do.
Without a doubt. Slow process, but it has happened. You're right. Yeah. The mindset is changing.
So my thinking is if you attack that on the collegiate level, you're going to have less CTE when NFL players get out of the back end of their career, if indeed a lot of these concussions they're suffering along the way are happening from padded practices in college. Mm-hmm. That's all. Just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting as well. Join Ron Wolfley on the eve of the draft as the Cardinals get ready to make their first round selection. Text DRAFT to 620-620 for an invitation to an exclusive Arizona Sports Valley virtual draft experience featuring Wolf and other football guests. Text DRAFT to 620-620. The Valley Virtual Series is presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. Coming up next, the Suns were nearly the victim of one of the greatest shots in NBA history last night. But what is the greatest shot in Suns history? We'll ask that and more in social studies next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.